97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry. Happy to be with you here. And I think Ethan, is he going to join us for this segment? That'll be pretty
cool.
Yeah,
Ethan's going to come in here in just a second. So we'll get him in here.
I don't care what you do and how much publicity you get. There's no way I'm ever going to watch the WNBA.
What do you got against the WNBA?
There is nothing that's going to get me to watch the league. Here's the thing. If you were to put a tier list of sports together, where would it rank? So when it comes to just in general audience-wise, is it basically NFL? The next would be Major League Baseball. Then is it NBA?
I would think NBA beats out NHL.
And then NASCAR, then NHL, then Major League Soccer, and then
is this viewership or is this your tier list?
This is just, I think, in general, fandom and viewership. So you go down the list. I don't know how far you have to go down before I'm like, I guess I'm bored. I'll watch a WNBA game. It's just not going to happen. And I feel like a lot of it is them just trying to force it on you. Like, you have to like this because it's a women league. And if you don't, you hate women. I think that's what they're trying to play on you. And I'm not buying it.
Can I ask you a question? Is it the W part of it that makes it the worst part? Or is it like... Is it women's sports in general, or is it just that league in particular that you don't want to watch?
I think I gave up on pretty much every sport some time ago, so it's kind of most of everything has lost the ability to grab my time anymore. But outside of it, I just don't know how you enjoy it more than like even college sports. I feel like I can go and watch college athletics and get more enjoyment than watching the WNBA. Any day of the week. And so now when you add to the tier list, now WNBA is not even in like the top 15. So why? I'm not going to commit time into it. And it gets way too much publicity for the amount of time I think people care about it. But I think they have this such artificial fandom because of Caitlin Clark and the phenomenon that she is. She's like propelling the league into new heights that people know her name and they know the league because of it. So now you have to just like, okay, now you have to be a fan or you're looked at as anti-women. And I just don't want to play into that trap.
Ethan, what are your thoughts on the WNBA?
The WNBA is a league that is, I mean, it piggybacks off of the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, you know, without having the official numbers in front of me, it is a league that, if it wasn't for the NBA, wouldn't survive. I mean, its numbers tend to be in the negative, I'm pretty sure, as far as there is no profit towards the league. Now, I hope that it can start building some success. It's good to, you know, the WNBA having success and having, you know, people in seats is not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
I would agree.
And hopefully, you know, that can continue to grow. And it has been, you know, it has been fun watching people get into Caitlin Clark and there be a little bit of excitement about it. And it is a little bit sad. It's a little bit frustrating it being turned into this race thing where people are, you know, start to make this wild accusation that people are only beginning to like the WNBA because the biggest name in it right now is white. I think that is so silly.
I think it's
so silly.
Well, this is basically what I wanted to get into when it came to the whole topic. One, I don't know if it's so much the popularity of the WNBA as the popularity of Caitlin Clark that people are attracted to the sport. And number two, one of the more recent articles is there's an Indiana senator by the name of Jim Banks. I know Jim Banks. I like Jim Banks. Remember, I lived in Indiana for a while. He was my congressman, so he came into our radio station all the time. We'd interview him, and he would just sit in my office, and we'd chat before he'd go on the air, and very, very nice guy. So his latest thing is that, okay, there was an investigation into Angel Reese's comments. She was playing in Indianapolis against the Fever, and Angel Reese said that someone in the audience said something racist to her, yelled something at her. So they looked at it. And you're talking about with Caitlin Clark, there's a million cameras and witnesses and video and broadcast. They reviewed everything and they found out, no, there's zero evidence of this. So now Senator Jim Banks says, I want an apology because you tried to drum up this race war. Mm-hmm. against our home team because you don't like her. So you tried to make this into a racial thing. So I look at it like this. Is the WNBA just flat out racist in the sense that they will reject their biggest star because of the color of her skin? And it seems like the players, and Angel Reese being probably the most vocal one, don't like the attention is going to her because of her skin color. I find that as a valid argument. Now, Ethan, you make it sound like that's not a valid argument.
Like what? Which part specifically is not a valid argument?
The fact that there is this racial undertone to the WNBA right now because of Caitlin Clark being white and the rest of the league rejecting that because of the sport.
My argument is that it feels like there is. I'm not saying that there isn't that. I'm saying that it's sad that it feels like the pushback is that. That's what I'm saying. So I think we agree on this. I think we're seeing this in the same light. If you want to break it down into the simplest of reasons as to why people like Caitlin Clark, why is it? It's because she does things that other girls in the league can't do. Nobody else is pulling up from the logo and draining threes. The WNBA cannot rely on the athleticism that the NBA has, which is what brings people in. The speed that it is played with, the physicality, the intensity, the dunking is a big part of it. The finesse aspect of it is a whole new level compared to the WNBA. People like the plays that make them go ooh and ah. And the WNBA doesn't have that until you bring in Caitlin Clark that says, hey, I'm going to shoot it from right here. And then she does it and she makes it. They need more of that. And breaking it down from the simplest of like, okay, what makes it tick? What makes people say, oh, I want to watch that? It's that kind of stuff. And until her, there really wasn't a lot of that. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with like, what do people want? And are you providing that product? Caitlin Clark is providing that product. It has nothing to do with race.
It's an exciting brand of basketball. It's like I was thinking about this whenever you first, Ryan, when you were talking about your tier list, and I used to like to watch the United States women's national team play soccer in the World Cup. I thought that was fun to watch, and it was because it was an exciting brand of soccer, and it's because they
or hockey.
Yeah, I like to watch exciting things, and the WNBA. It's basketball. I'm not a huge basketball fan. About the only basketball I watch is March Madness, and that's because March Madness is, for whatever reason, March Madness captures that energy. It's the excitement, and I think Ethan's spot on with what he was saying. People didn't want to watch the WNBA because what they had wasn't exciting basketball, and Caitlin Clark brings an X factor to it and makes people go, what is she going to do next?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So let's look at the comments from U.S. Senator out of Indiana, Jim Banks, essentially saying that, hey, you owe these fans an apology, Angel Reese. You're saying something that wasn't true, and you're trying to paint Indianapolis and the fans of this club as racist because you claim they were yelling things at you when really that was clearly not the case. And they're trying to bring race into it because of it. That's part of it. They're trying to use this as a way because they don't like the person that's on the court that they're playing against. Now, if I were someone that was high up in the league and this was the WNBA and I was like the commissioner, I would be messaging her team. Is it Chicago Sky?
Yes.
I would be like, you got to compel her to cut this out, number one, because you have your league to protect at this point. Your star player is the only reason why people are watching this league, and you can't go out there and accuse her fans and her and, you know, kind of being racist at the same time. You can't do that.
Yeah, I do think, and to your point, is the WNBA racist? I don't know that the league is racist. I do think that there are racists in the league, if that makes sense. And I think it's a lot of like, I don't know that Angel Reese is racist. I know that she doesn't like Caitlin Clark. I know that there's a huge amount of jealousy out there for her. And like you would see her do the interviews where she goes, you know, people aren't just coming to watch her. They want to see me play. And it's like people watch you for a different reason. they want to see the me bounds.
So here's a question: is that rivalry? You know, we've discussed several things regarding Caitlin Clark and the opposition and this. You know, disliking, which seems to be because of her skin color. Is that negative for the league? Is the publicity that comes from the Angel Reese Caitlin Clark rivalry, is that bad for the league?
You know, this it's interesting you say that, because I feel like before that incident, they would have said, no, this is good for the league. But I think after this incident, they might be saying, eh, boy, maybe not all publicity is good publicity, because this does not make us look good.
I disagree. I mean, there's been, and the reason I say that is because it feels like ever since the beginning of that Caitlin Clark Angel Reese rivalry, even back to when they were in college, mm-hmm. and there was, the first big blow up was when Angel Reese was at LSU and Clark was at Iowa, and they played in the Elite Eight or the Final Four, and LSU beat Caitlin Clark in Iowa, and Angel Reese is right up in her face as she's as Clark's walking away, pointing at her finger like that, you know, they're gonna get the ring, and Clark is just walking away, and that got turned into a huge thing, and people were saying, oh, well, if it was the other way around, then you guys wouldn't have an issue with it, and it became a huge race thing. So now I know this is a little bit different because race is, you know, they are bringing up the racial accusations here, but race has been a part of this rivalry and this argument ever since it got started. So that's why I would argue that regardless, even though it is stupid and annoying that race has to get brought up in the first place, why can't it just be fun antics and people not liking each other? Why does race have to get brought up? I still think that it's good for the league, because prior to it, we weren't talking about the WNBA at all. It was almost this, like, it's too much of a joke to even get any discussion time.
They were moving games to bigger facilities to get more fans into the facility,
exactly.
So they could watch games whenever Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese's rivalry
game. It's not a coincidence those the Chicago Sky and the Indiana Fever played each other the first game of the year, and it was the biggest conversation sports that evening.
I hate that it's that the racial element is a part of it. I hate that. I wish that it was just Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese have a rivalry. I wish it was that. But if my memory serves me, and Ryan, maybe you can correct me on this, you go back to the Johnson versus Bird thing and the rivalry that was, and was there not a racial component in that as well?
Yeah, I mean, decades ago, there's always going to be that undertone. But
I don't know that there was outright accusations, though, of the crowd being racist or saying racist things to people.
Well, did they just do that poll TV series on HBO or whatever? Some of the behind-the-scenes stuff going on with Magic Johnson and the time. Was it HBO or Showtime or one of them? But they just had that one serialized dramatization of this whole thing going on.
That was HBO.
HBO. And they showed all the behind-the-scenes stuff, so it wasn't all pure.
No, I'm sure it wasn't. I mean, the United States in the late 70s, early 80s is a different world.
Yeah. And I think Larry Bird played into that, too. What was one of the great Larry Bird comments? Like, you're going to have to, if I'm getting this quote wrong, please forgive me, but I'm just going to do it anyway. So I think Larry Bird was like, he was playing off the bench and someone was guarding him. And he looked over and he said, really, this is what you're doing tonight? Like, to the opposition bench? I'm like, what are you talking about? And he basically said, you're putting the white guy on me? All right. So then he goes, he just sounds like one of these great knights. So he kind of played into that, too. But I think in a more, I don't want to say innocent way, but that's funny. Like, that is funny trash talk as opposed to trying to drum up hostility. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I look at the way, you know, you go back to that and there was trash talk, and Larry Bird was, the more I learn about him, he was the king of trash talk. Mm-hmm. He could talk
so good.
Trash.
He was so good.
But I also look at, like, what happens in the WNBA, and it's violent, and it feels malicious. Not just competitive, but almost malicious. Like, I don't just want to beat you. I want to beat you up. And I don't know that that's healthy. But again, to Ethan's point, I don't know that there's such thing as bad publicity for the NBA. The WNBA needs eyes on the WNBA.
Yeah,
how you sell advertising and all that other stuff.
I mean, A look of disgrace is better than an eye roll of like, okay, who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay.
That's my thoughts on that.
Because honestly, I can only name three players in the WNBA.
You can name, I'm maybe at five,
I'm at
six at best.
You're at three? Are we thinking the same people?
If you're thinking of Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and Brittany Griner.
That's it.
Oh, I forget. Yeah,
that's the only one I know. Because
that's
the whole Russian thing.
Because
that's it. All right. Well, all I can say is I see the articles, I see the headlines, I see people talking about it. I don't care how often it's put up in the news. I'm just not going to invest time into it. I love hockey. I love the NHL. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching the NHL. I grew up here in Detroit, so the Red Wings were like the biggest thing in the 90s and 2000s. Sorry. I know. Go ahead.
Nothing but sympathy for Detroit fans these days.
That's rough. So I just completely lost everyone. But I look at that and I say, I love hockey, and I still don't have time to watch that. Like, I don't have the investment into just caring about sports leagues because someone told me I should. I just don't.
It's because it's bad hockey.
Gosh.
Red Wings, they've had a rough couple of years.
I'm done.
Ethan's throwing bombs.
I know. It was a tough one. All right, Ethan. I heard a rumor. Do you walk into the building listening to Dancing Queen?
Do I walk into the building listening to Dancing Queen? Only on Fridays.
So this is true. So you're jamming to it on the way in.
Come on, how can you not be jamming to Dancing Queen?
Oh, because there's a lot of other songs you could be jamming to.
Okay, you have to give me at least the benefit of the doubt. You know, usually I am picking out music for a female host also. So that
That
plays a part in this as well.
You've had fantastic music selection. I'm just kind of pulling your leg there. Ethan, thank you very much. I appreciate
that. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, I started a new adventure in my radio career. I want to talk to you about it, Brad, if that's all right.
Yeah, let's do it.
Don't forget, we have that poll question going up in our YouTube page right now. If you're buying the whole Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein, after the new... Basically, people that are very trustworthy are saying there's nothing to this. Do you trust that? Do you believe that? So we'll take some of your comments on that coming up, too. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry, 97.1 FM Talk. And welcome back. I'll be filling in for Annie Fry the next couple of days. I'm Ryan Recker, and tomorrow's Friday. Then I'm in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, a couple of days together. So go ahead and feel free to send me your hate mail at Ryan Recker on Facebook and Twitter. Ryan Recker Radio there, too.
You can send him accolades, too. He's doing a good job.
Oh, that's nice, too. So I started something new in my radio career over the past weekend. And I got to tell you, it was unlike anything I've ever done before in radio.
When I heard you did this, I was blown away.
So can I give you my radio resume, some things I've done in my career that's really cool, but nothing has been cooler than this?
Yeah, run it down, man.
So I started on a classic rock radio station. And at that classic rock station, one of the coolest things I did was a promotion where we organized a charity motorcycle ride with Dee Snider from Twisted Sister.
Okay, that's cool.
That was super cool. So the idea was we had a city close to us named Cridersville. And the idea was let's rename Cridersville to Snidersville. Now, he had a radio program. And we said, hey, let's just do this. Maybe we'll do like a video and it'll be a fun little thing. And he's like, no, man, let's come and do this in person. So he volunteered and he brought his family like it was a vacation to Ohio. And we did this charity bike ride. It was fantastic. It was awesome. In Indiana, the radio station I worked for, I won a Marconi Award for Station of the Year, which was huge. I was able to induct someone into the National Radio Hall of Fame. He was a broadcaster by the name of Bob Sievers, wonderful regional broadcaster, but he had one of the largest audiences just based on the way the AM radio used to carry back in the day before FM. It was unbelievable, the audience that he had. And he was just a down-home regular dude, and he was just a special type of guy. And I tried for years to get him into the Radio Hall of Fame, and I did. And his family, now that he's passed, allowed me to do the speech for him to do that at the Radio Hall of Fame. That was a fantastic honor. You know, I've won a ton of awards. I just won a Murrow Award last week, which
That's
was kind of cool.
Congratulations.
Super exciting. Thank you. You know, there's so many different things I've done in my radio career, and I don't know if anything tops what I did this past weekend. I was asked to be a host for a radio program called Coast to Coast AM. So the original show was with Art Bell, went through the 80s and 90s and through basically early to mid 2000s. George Norrie's the host now. George Norrie is someone that lives here in St. Louis, and he's the person that took over for Art Bell, and he grew the show even further. Art has this history to him. He's the OG, and people love Art Bell. And they have a movie they're going to make about Art Bell coming out. Like it's they're in pre-production or whatever. The last thing I saw was that they were putting out bids for people, and there's studios that are trying to get this movie the rights. Art was a very unique guy, way ahead of his time, and he was, you know, one of the top broadcasters in the country. And they asked me some time ago, and they said, "Hey, we're looking for some fill-in people to do weekends. Would you be interested?" I said, "Absolutely." And then they went like 4 or 5 months without saying anything to me. And I thought, well, I guess it didn't work out. And then all of a sudden they said, "Okay, we're ready to go." And this past weekend was my first hosting of Coast to Coast AM. I did Friday night and Saturday night. Now, keep in mind, Coast to Coast airs on this station.
Yes.
It's on like 650 radio stations across the country. It's easily the most listened to program through the overnight radio. So when I was doing the show from here in Detroit, it's so strange. I'm in like a closet, this, you know, just maybe bigger than the one I'm in right now, but I'm in a small studio, and that small studio is broadcasting to more people than any other radio program in the country. Like you are the most listened to person during these 4 hours that you're on the air. And it's a paranormal show. You talk about, you know, things that are interesting. Like, so the first guest was near-death experiences and the visions and things people see after, you know, these near-death experiences. We had open lines. We had a guest that was from the SETI Institute, big radio, giant satellites they set up to try to find signals out in space. We had someone that created an invention he says he believes can open up a portal. These are the guests that I had to start the show. And I'll tell you what, it was one of the biggest thrills of my life, and they asked me to keep coming back. So I'm going to do, I think, one weekend a month of Coast to Coast AM, and we'll see where it goes. But man, what an awesome, amazing opportunity.
That sounds amazing. And you were saying, how does that compare? Like, let's start with the topics. How does that compare to the other stuff that you've done in radio? Because it sounds like you've had a pretty long career.
Yeah, well, I mean, somewhat. Hopefully it's longer.
If you put it in radio years.
When you put it in radio years, yes, like dog years. It's like you have to like figure it out that way. There's a few things that stood out. People really like to talk about you more online with a show that size. So I do searches for my name, like Google alerts and stuff. I started getting a lot of alerts. I'm like, oh, people are like mentioning me on these websites and blogs and things like that. And especially on the social media. At first, people said, okay, now keep in mind, Coast to Coast is not a political show by nature. So people looked me up when they announced that I would be guest hosting, and they said, here's another crazy conservative. Oh, this guy's going to stink. He's going to be terrible. We hate him already. And then I did the first show, and politics were not even brought up. And they're like, hey, this guy's pretty good. So that was kind of cool. I won him over. Yeah. The emails, I couldn't believe how many emails I got. I mean, so I did a late night show on the sister station here. And there would be topics where we would light the phone lines up and we would take, you know, 2 hours of phone calls, and it would be like jammed the whole time. It's like that on Coast to Coast, except that it's a weird time frame. And the stuff that people call in could sometimes be very random, which is, you know, just one of the nature of the show. It's not like necessarily content driven. I found that my wife was obsessed with looking at people talking about me online. That was a strange thing. Do you care? Like, does your wife even care if anything's said about you online? Does she have any care in the world?
No, I think my wife would rather not know what's being said about me online, to be honest with you. And I actually, I don't do Google alerts or anything like that, so I don't know what's being said about me either. But
you should have alerts set up. I mean, I think that for the sake of my wife, just threads of social media posts, people saying mostly good things. She was obsessed with it, so I was not expecting that. I also found that it didn't really hit me that the gravity of what was going on until the bumper music started playing at the very start of the show. In that iconic bum 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 bum, and it starts playing,
yeah.
And that's when it hits you. You're like, whoa, this is real now. This is real, because you're listening to the network promos and stuff that, you know, normally the regular listener wouldn't hear. The only time they fill, like for satellite shows, they fill with PSAs and promos, mostly so if a radio station accidentally misses their cue to play local commercials, it's not dead air for like 3 or 4 minutes, right? So they play things and you're listening to these things, and there's like really not a lot of like substance to it. It's like, hey, here's a guy talking about cantaloupes, and you know, here's something about your landscaping and stuff. So it's like, okay, but man, as soon as that bumper music hits, you're like, whoa, I didn't get butterflies. It just was like the weight. It's like the air changed, the atmosphere changed, and it was fantastic. So I look forward to doing it again. Yeah. I got a ton of people on social media started following me randomly on Twitter. Like all of a sudden, just followers, followers, followers.
That's super cool. Do you know the date that you're doing your next one?
Yeah, it's the last weekend of June. Is it the 27th and 28th? Let me check my calendar.
And that would be a Friday and a Saturday again? Or?
Yeah, Friday night and a Saturday, Saturday night and a Sunday. Those are the 27th and 28th. So it's the last weekend of June. So I'm hoping they like to keep it consistent. Mm-hmm. The last weekend will be my weekend. That's what I would like to do.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I will definitely be tuning in for that one. I didn't find out before. I had heard rumors that you were going to get to, but I didn't find out until afterwards that you actually did end up hosting, because I would have definitely tuned in for that. I want to hear it. I want to see what, you know, it's such a cool show in the fact that it's such a departure from what we do here. And, you know, I mean, our stuff is mainly politics. And then in the 2 o'clock hour, we get into some cultural stuff and just some goofy stuff, too.
Yeah.
But
and I'm looking at the comments right now, and people are like, I used to listen all the time. I'd listen all the time. It says Wrecker's very good with comments. So there's people that are talking about it, and I pay a lot of respect to Art Bell. And if you listen to Coast AM, I hope that you listen the nights that I am on. That would be fantastic to get some of these messages.
Yeah. Yep. I'm definitely going to set my calendar and tune in for that.
You are not going to wake up.
I am absolutely
at midnight. Well, 2 a.m. or whatever.
Wake up at, doesn't it start at like 11?
Well, Central Time, it would be midnight.
Midnight. So I'm up by then, especially on a Saturday or Friday at least. I'm up that late. So just pop the radio on and listen to the dulcet tones of Ryan Wrecker hosting Coast to Coast.
It was so good. And it messed my weekend schedule up so much because the sleeping was just non-existent.
So they do it live.
It was terrible. Oh, it's live, yeah. Eastern time where I'm in, 1 to 5 a.m.
Ooh, that is super late then.
Yeah, but it went by super fast, and the format plays that way. So I got to tell you, this is what an amazing thing to be asked to do, a syndicated show like that, in particular one of the biggest syndicated shows in the country, and easily the most listened to show during that time slot. It's just amazing, amazing. I'm looking forward to the movie that comes out when it does, probably in 5 years from now or whatever it is, however long the production time takes, 4 years or it should be fun. Maybe this is what I should do. Maybe I should cheer that the production gets delayed and then maybe I can continue on the show and maybe there's a chance that I get put on as a background character.
Oh, that would be fun.
I'd be there just long enough for the producers and the writers to hear me randomly one weekend. And maybe I'll get lucky and be put into the movie.
Yep.
Who would play me anyway?
Who would play Ryan Wrecker?
No one could ever play me.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't be played. I'm incapable of being played.
I was thinking about this. It's one of the ask me anything questions. Who would play you in a movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who would play you?
There's maybe people that could write the comments down and do that.
Yeah.
If you think there's someone that could play me. All right. All right. So I know we weren't going to take the whole segment talking about this, but thanks for letting me indulge there. But I got to tell you,
it's cool stuff.
It's been so cool. And I still get emails after the fact and people writing me and stuff and sending me photos and links and it's just fun. So there's a couple other stories I wanted to get to. And, you know, it's so funny because I said on Coast to Coast, kind of stay away from the politics, things like that. So let's go right back into politics.
I'm down. Let's do it.
The show goes. Did you see the clip of a freed hostage on CNN discussing how he was treated by Hamas?
I didn't see the whole thing, but I saw what you sent me.
It's kind of interesting to think. If you are taken by a terrorist organization and you are alive to tell the story, because a lot of people did not survive. I mean, what really happened was a scary... You could have died at any moment, at any time. They could have just taken your life. And they wouldn't have thought twice about it. They wouldn't have cared. But there's a freed hostage that was on CNN that was discussing the treatment of Hamas and what happened after Donald Trump was elected president. Can we play? I think that's clip three. Can we play that?
Yes, it's him. He got me out. He got the hostages out. Before We felt like nothing is happening, you know? And I remember there, for me there, ever since he came into the role, they were very scared of him. Yeah, they wanted...
Who?
The terrorist.
Were afraid of Trump.
Yeah, they wanted Kamala to be chosen, to be elected.
You talked politics with them?
Yeah. They wanted Kamala to be elected. But as soon as Donald Trump was elected, they understood that he wants to bring the hostages back home. Yeah. So immediately the way they treated me changed. So if it's the amount of food, I could say this, that when Trump became president, yeah, the way they treated us changed.
How about that? So he lives to tell the story that he, under the captivity of the whatever prison cell they were in or area they were confined to by the terrorists, one, they would talk politics with the terrorists, and number two, the conditions of which they were held captive were improved after the election. Isn't that something? I was just kind of surprised by just what it's like to live as a prisoner under Hamas. But to think that you would even want to talk to your captors, one, but two, I'm guessing in the back of your mind, you're thinking, how can I manipulate them to stay alive?
Yes.
So politics becomes part of that in some ways. Does it surprise you to think that the changes in American politics with Donald Trump getting elected actually improved his quality of living?
No, I'm a homer. I definitely believe that. And I think that all has to do with how people viewed what a Kamala Harris presidency would have been. It would have been a continuation of the Joe Biden presidency. And, you know, they wouldn't have been very well. I understand why they wanted them to live, because the Biden administration was very much like, let's get a Palestinian state. Let's get this thing going. But I also know that they started treating those hostages nicer because they understand that if things go down, they need to have we treated them well, treat us well, because they didn't want to live under the, for lack of a better term, the wrath of Donald Trump.
Oh, you know, I looked at it a little bit different, because I if you're a terrorist, and I don't want to give them too much credit, but my take was that they looked at him as more valuable now to be alive than dead. If they look at Donald Trump and you have a piece where there's actually someone wants to recover and save you from that situation, then you become more valuable to the terrorists that are holding you kidnapped, because they could probably get something, not necessarily money, because, you know, they know Trump won't work that way,
right,
but they would use it as leverage for a trade or something like that. But if, let's say, Kamala Harris, they realize that they don't really care if this guy lives or dies, because for as far as they're concerned, this war can go on forever. Terrorists can keep operating the way they are. They're probably going to enable them by funding them back alleyways anyway. So you don't really have any value anymore. So they probably would have treated him worse. That's my take about it. I don't think he's lying that they treated him better. I think the reason why they treated him better was because they realized that a Donald Trump would actually want him back, and Kamala Harris probably wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. Yeah, you're on to something there, because like if the Harris administration would have got in, maybe they were just going to give him what they wanted anyway, and so that man didn't mean anything to him. And you know food's pretty scarce over there, and why would you give him extra food or anything like that if they just don't mean anything, or you actively don't like the hostage, which I think an argument could be made for that as well.
Yep. All right. So how about this after the break? I can't wait to see these poll results. If you are someone that voted in the YouTube poll, this is great. If you haven't, you only got a couple more minutes, I would go do that now. There's some new information about the Jeffrey Epstein stuff, and you have some pretty high-ranking officials looking at the documents, and they're saying nothing to see here. I've had a hard time believing that. I really am. It's going to take me a little bit to wrap my head around that. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in. 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Wow, so many comments today. I'm looking forward to seeing the poll results here soon. So like you mentioned, Brad, you got a couple more minutes to go in and vote if you haven't already on the YouTube page. So can't wait to see that and some of the comments that have came in. Before we get to that, I know we're waiting on Ethan. Did you see the story from MSN? We're all addicted to Zillow now.
I have not seen this story.
Are you? I can't remember. Are you a homeowner?
I am a homeowner.
All right. How often do you check the value of your home on Zillow?
I don't. I live in Illinois because whenever my home value goes up, it just means they're going to charge me more in taxes.
Right. Well, I know Zillow's not a good indicator of the taxation, meaning that the valuation that they give you on that site's going to be different than the tax guy that comes around and does the assessment. Still, I think people are always very engaged with their own property because they want to know, is it worth more? And you're telling me that when the house on the market in your neighborhood pops up, you're not on Zillow immediately looking at the photos?
Oh, I'm not. My wife is.
Oh, she's right into it.
Yes. Especially the ones that are the same or a very similar floor plan to us. There's about 3-4 houses in my neighborhood that are the same floor plan as ours. And whenever those pop up, she is all over it. And a lot of people come in and they do renovations and all sorts of things in those houses. And
yeah. So here's part of the story. It says, in the more than 2 decades since online listings came into being, they've become a key part of many folks' scrolling diets. Numbers provided to the Washington Post by Zillow are staggering: 2.4 billion visits to its site in the first quarter of this year alone. 2.4 billion in just the first quarter of the year. Compare that to 4 million homes sold in the United States in 2024. Zillow's just one of the options. There's realtor.com and there's all kinds of different websites where you can go look these things up. If you're looking for a home, you're obsessed with these websites, by the way, because you got to have the leg up on these other people. Because back when it was super competitive the last couple of years, if you missed out on one, it was because you were snoozing, because these homes could come and go in like a day. It was ridiculous. Now it's starting to actually level off a little bit, and it's a little bit easier because the demand, the people that are out there looking, are just not the same as the way it was the last couple of years. That just people are holding off. There's just so much uncertainty going on. So it's a little bit better now than before, but the home values keep going up. And like my wife's sake, she gets the alerts and she'll look on there and she'll be like, oh, your home value has changed. And she'll look at the email and log in or whatever it is. And like, oh, it's worth this much now. Now, keep in mind, Zillow has no idea actually how much your home's worth. It uses their algorithms and it can be pretty accurate, but it doesn't know what's on the inside. You can have chalk outlines on the inside. You could have had a cult move in and they could have had a mass sacrifice in your living room floor. They wouldn't account for that sort of thing. Could have been a meth lab in the basement or the garage. They don't know these
Listen,
things.
Listen, if they clean it up, it's okay.
It's just okay. You have to disclose those things. I learned that from Better Call Saul.
Oh, yeah.
About the meth lab thing. Breaking Bad. Did you watch Breaking Bad?
No, I didn't. It was on cable when I didn't have cable.
Oh, I got you. Brad, you're really missing out, man. That was one of the all-time great shows of all time. So I think it was the first season. It was a fantastic power move. So they send the lawyer in to go buy a home. So the show's old. It's not going to ruin any plot lines telling you this. But essentially, you have one of the main characters, and you have Walter White, which is the main character, and then Jesse, his apprentice, I guess you could say. And they move into his old parents' house to start cooking meth. And they're trying to sell the house, so it's empty at the time, so they feel like they can go and do this thing. So they're like, you know what, well, let's just buy the house from them. So what happens is they go and they try to purchase the house. The lawyer goes in and tries to lowball them by a couple hundred thousand. And they're like, they're so upset. How could you even waste our time? And he's like, well, you didn't disclose it was a meth lab. So maybe if we were to report this, that you didn't disclose this, you could lose your licenses, or you can just sell it to us at the price we thought was generous. So, you know, that kind of furthered the plot.
Man,
Zillow did not disclose that. I'll put it that way. But it also doesn't account for all the bad decisions you make in your own property. I mean, if you go out and, I don't know, rip out a tree that was beautiful, then that could cause some problems. Or you redesign the bathroom and it's uglier than it was before. Got to watch out for those things. Yeah. All right. I know we only got a couple of minutes. I'm really curious how this polling turned out, because I have a feeling how it turned out. But in reality, I can't wait to hear how this audience answered it. So maybe we read the question again.
Yeah. The question is, are you buying the official narrative on Epstein? And it's a yes or no. Ryan, I wanted to ask you, you keep saying you struggle with this, so I'm assuming what's your vote on the poll?
I'm not buying it. So here's the thing. I trust them that they're telling us the truth. I'm still going to hold out. There's something tells me we're not getting the full picture. I'm going to hold that out. And I don't know if maybe some of these documents or whatever have been so well scrubbed that it was just not presented at this time. I still want to open and keep the door open for something changing in the future. So I'm going to say I'm not buying it just yet.
So I'm a yes on this poll. I believe Kash Patel and I believe Dan Bongino on the act. I believe that they have the evidence. They've looked at it and they're like, yeah, he did it to himself. So the reason I say that is too, though, like I know that you had brought up, there's lawyers out there. There's rich people and they can afford lawyers and they wouldn't give up that easy. And I think that's normally true. But I also know that there are very powerful people out there that have very much sway over what you do. And they said, either you do this or we will ruin this aspect of whatever. And they basically gave him no choice but to do it to himself.
Oh, so.
So I am in on the conspiracy theories.
That there was someone physically there.
Right. I think that he was told to do it and he did it. And it was to save face or whatever. But
I can't
also
wait to see the results.
I also am of the mind that we're not going to get any new information on this because it's been so long that, like you said, most of this stuff has been scrubbed or gone away.
All right, Ethan, what's the result?
Before I give it, do you have any guesses as to what it is? What percentage do you think said yes? Just throw it out there.
I'm going to say 60-40. 60 believe the narrative now, 40 do not believe it.
213 votes on today's YouTube live chat poll. Are you buying the official narrative on Epstein? 13% say yes. 87% say no.
So they're with me on this one, 87%. Yeah. Wow. I guess I should have probably guessed that. I'm too invested in this story, and the truth has taken way too long to come out for me to just accept it immediately. All right, I'll be back again tomorrow filling in for Annie Fry. Thank you, Ethan. Let's do some Dancing Queen tomorrow, possibly. That'd be great.
Sounds
Brad,
good.
It was always a pleasure to work with you. I guess I'll see you tomorrow.
Yo, for sure.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com.